Price of Fear. Brought to you by Vincent Price.
Hello there. You might be aware that as an actor, I've become associated almost entirely with what are known as horror movies. Personally, I don't think that description is quite adequate. I prefer to think of them purely and simply as fantasies, because they are, you know. They just couldn't happen, however vivid your imagination might be. In fact, there are far more macabre or even horrific events happening all around us every day of our lives, but we're just not aware of them. On my travels making movies in all parts of the world, men and women from various walks of life somehow always seem to manage to seek me out and to tell me their own strange experiences, and sometimes even I've been present when some of these frightening events have actually occurred. And now here I am with an opportunity to tell you a few of these stories, sometimes horrific, sometimes with a macabre sense of humor, but always, I promise you, containing the element of fear. And I've titled them, if you'll pardon the liberty, The Price of Fear. Now, my first story, which I've called Remains to Be Seen, I only heard about much later, but the details were recounted in such vivid terms by one of the principal characters involved, and I'll leave you to guess which one it was, that I almost felt that I was there. It concerns two men, neighbors, with like interests and a similar problem. Their interests were innocent enough, gardening and chess. But the problem they shared, well, was, shall we say, not quite as simple and not as easily solved.
Albert! Albert, where are you?
Emily Warren would hardly have omitted informing her husband, Albert, that they had recently acquired new neighbors. But at the same time, knowing Emily, she'd also probably contributed her own foregone opinion of them, either scathing, contemptuous, or both. In any event, it wasn't until some weeks after the newcomer's arrival that Albert actually became aware of them. It was a fine day in early spring, and Albert was digging in his beloved garden when the voice came to him across the low wicker fence that divided his domain from his neighbor's.
Good morning. You can have a nice show there.
Oh, good morning.
My name's Fred. Fred Treber. We're your new neighbors. At least not new, it's just that... Well, this is the first time we got round to introducing ourselves properly.
A shortish, rotund figure, Fred Treber, offered his flabby pink hand.
My wife, Alice, that is, did try to pay a social call on one occasion. She got no answer.
Sorry about that. We must have been out.
But even as he said it, Albert knew the excuse must have sounded feeble. Emily had probably simply assessed her caller from behind the cover of the curtains and decided that social intercourse with their new neighbors was not to be encouraged. Anyway, Albert rubbed his hands on his dungarees and took Fred's hand in his own. Fred nodded towards the flower bed Albert had been tending.
They're amber goliaths, aren't they?
Why, yes, they are.
The number of people among Albert's acquaintances who knew anything about dahlias at all could be counted on one hand. But a man who could actually recognize a specific strain before it had even come into bloom was obviously a force to be reckoned with. Fred took in Albert's immaculately tended flower beds, the precision cut of the lawn, and then looked towards his own wilderness.
A lot of work to be done here, of course. The last crowd. Still, gardening isn't everybody's cup of tea, is it?
No, no. They didn't seem to take much interest.
Do you play chess?
What?
Oh, you needn't even bother to answer that one. Show me a well-ordered garden, and 9 times out of 10, I'll show you a man who plays chess.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But I do, as a matter of fact. If you like.
Yes?
Only that if you'd care to have a game sometime.
I'd like that very much. Alice doesn't take any interest in being strangers to the neighborhood.
Tell you what, then. If you're not doing anything this Thursday, you might care to come along to our local chess forum.
Oh, it sounds very grand. Way out of my league.
Nothing of the kind. Just a dozen or so of us. We meet up each week. The odd game, perhaps a drink or two afterwards. We usually kick off about 7.
Fred? Fred?
Albert was aware of the crash of a window and Alice's frizzled red head emerging. Even at this distance, henna was obviously the order of the day.
How many more times do I have to call you?
No peace for the wicked, eh?
Your lunch has been on the table for at least 5 minutes. So don't blame me if it's cold again. Well, what are you doing down there anyway?
Just a chat, Alice, my love.
Because I thought you'd got something better to do.
Wives. You know what they are.
Wives? Oh, yes, I know what they are, all right.
Till Thursday, then. About 6.
Albert! For heaven's sake, Albert!
6 will be fine.
6 let it be, then.
And 6 on the dot it was. Except that Albert wasn't quite ready for him. That is to say, he thought he was ready until Emily decided to point out...
The collar of that shirt's beginning to fray. And Albert, those shoes, it could do with a rub over. And who's ever heard of anyone wearing a polka dot tie with a striped shirt, anyway?
Oh, dear. Shan't keep you long, Fred.
No hurry. I'm sure Emily will do a good job of entertaining me. Won't you, Emily? Don't mind me calling you Emily, do you?
Not more than a couple of minutes.
Don't forget to wash behind your ears, old fellow.
A cup of coffee, Mr. Treber.
Never touch the stuff. Caffeine, you know. Murder on the stomach. Not to mention the nerves.
Da-da-dum-di-dee. Oh, you're admiring my painting.
Painting?
It's a very good copy, don't you think?
Not at all bad, as repros go.
Repro?
Oh, yes, there is a difference.
Oh?
A copy is made by an artist, a repro by a machine. The one is alive by the very nature of it having been copied, the other dead by the very nature of it having been...
Reproed?
You've got it. Bit busy, though, isn't it?
Oh?
Bruegel always was, of course. Busy minds make busy scenes, don't you agree?
Bruegel?
Bruegel, Jan, 1569 to 1642.
You know a lot about art.
Nothing at all. Only the facts. Alice, my wife, that is, invested in this encyclopedia thing, you see. Never opened it herself, but the bindings are impressive, I'll grant you. Every home should have one. You know the kind of thing.
Oh, yes, we have a simply splendid...
Oh, yes, first thing I noticed as I came in. It's all facts, isn't it? Only facts. Nothing about what the man thought or felt or suffered. Only what he did.
All set, then?
Who is for chess, then?
Fred Treber's chess wasn't exactly up to grandmaster standards. In fact, he freely admitted...
Self-taught. Never read a book on the subject in my life. That's for all this classic opening gambit stuff you go on about, Albert. Well, I'll never get that into my head, and that's for sure.
But for all his good-humored modesty, he had a natural, almost reckless flair for the game, so that as loser pays, Albert usually found himself buying the drinks. The conversation on these occasions was inevitably of the small talk variety. It wasn't until a month after their first evening together that Fred suddenly took it into his head to change all that. And the audacity of it left Albert gasping.
She really did give you a roasting last night, didn't she? I mean, even more than usual, I mean. Really excelled herself.
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course you do. Your sweet Emily is what I'm talking about. What was it all about, anyway? Just things in general? Or did you actually commit the cardinal sin of forgetting to put the cat out?
I really don't know what...
But you do, our Albert. You seem to forget that apart from putting out comfortable suburban villas within spitting distance of each other, the architect must have had something going for paper-thin walls. Pour milk on your cereal, or turn to the sports page, and it's like you were doing it at our breakfast table instead of your own.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, don't be. Every time your sweet Emily gives you a bawling out, I'm grateful.
I wish you'd stop calling her that.
Well, not so sweet Emily, then.
Why should you be grateful?
Why? Because my not-so-sweet Alice is so busy bending her ear trying to tune into your latest misdemeanor, it gives me a temporary respite from her own scolding tongue. How did he come to marry her in the first place, anyway?
Who? Emily?
Don't tell me you've got another shrew tucked away somewhere. You don't have to tell me.
It just happened. We both worked for the same firm, Marshall Paper Products. I was senior accountant, and Emily...
A plodding typist?
How did you know?
It's the classic situation, isn't it? Switch firms and you've got Alice and me to a team.
Plain, quiet, subdued. Not bright, mind. Her conversation seldom went beyond the weather.
I bet she only ever read the newspapers on alternate days.
You're probably right. But then, well, I was getting on a bit. Always did feel there was something to be said for a marriage being an arrangement, not a romance.
And so you marry them, and are surprised to find your plain, quiet, subdued woman can turn into a shrew overnight. Have another drink.
I don't think we ought to. The wives will be expecting us.
Which is exactly why we're going to. This time it's on me. Two of the same, please.
While they waited for their drinks, no word was spoken. And yet, out of their silence, there seemed to grow a new understanding. An understanding at once sympathetic and, to a degree, conspiratorial. They were like two men who had come to terms with the fact that they faced a common enemy. It was a recognition that Albert would have preferred not to acknowledge, so that when the drinks eventually arrived, he did his best to refute it.
Thanks.
About what you were saying, Fred.
About what we were saying, Albert.
We, then.
Well, what?
Well, things could have turned out a damn sight worse for the pair of us, you know.
Or the left on the shelf bit, you mean? We should be so lucky.
All right. So we both thought we were marrying one kind of person and ended up...
marrying another and wishing to God we hadn't.
Well, we're not exactly Gregory Peck, are we?
No.
I mean, it's a damn sight better than being left out in the cold altogether. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, all things considered, wouldn't you?
Fred did not reply. His eyes remained averted. But Albert was disconcertingly aware of the very faintest of smiles at the corner of his lips.
Damn it all, man, wouldn't you? I mean, any port in a storm, as the saying goes.
Oh, all very well for mariners caught up in a storm and making a last-ditch stand, I grant you. But we don't happen to be in their exact predicament, do we, Albert? Not absolutely last-ditch, Albert. For us, there are other possibilities. Other alternatives.
And Fred looked up. This time, their eyes held. And Albert felt a sinking feeling at the pit of his stomach. Checkmate, game, and match, he thought. And yet the real game was only about to begin. It happened in the early hours of the morning, but Alice Trevor, a natural insomniac anyway, and always on permanent guard duty as far as the Warrens were concerned, was out of bed and staring into the moonlit garden almost before the last tinkle of glass had died away.
Fred! Fred! Fred, will you wake up when I'm talking to you?
As if there were any choice.
That crash. It came from the Warrens, all right. One of their fancy French windows with the sound of it.
Burglar, you mean?
Use your head. Burglar would be breaking in, wouldn't he?
Just customary, I believe.
Well, whoever this is... It's Albert! It's him, I tell you!
Fred Treble, will you get out of that bed?
All right. But for heaven's sake, it must be 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well?
It looks like Albert, all right.
Well, of course it's Albert.
So?
So why would he be breaking out of his own house? Hey, Fred, I do... Yes, he is. He's struggling with something. Hey, that's why he broke that pane of glass, you see. Struggling to get something through. Can you make it out?
Some kind of box, by the look of it.
Chest. A chest, more like. A large tin chest. Now, whatever would he be... Well, he's dragging it across the terrace now. Oh, do get behind that curtain, when I tell you. Do you want him to think we're spying on him?
Well, we are, aren't we?
Well, now, he's dragging it down the terrace steps. Whatever is it?
One hell of a weight by the look of it.
Well, he's left it there. Right in the middle of the lawn. Hey. He's going into the tool shed. Hey, do you see that? See the way he looked round before he opened the door? Very suspicious. Hey, he's coming out. He's carrying something.
Back to that chest thing by the looks of it.
I do believe it. Yes, it's a shovel. A large, heavy garden shovel. He's digging, Fred. He's digging.
But for Fred and Alice Treber, the show was over. As silently and dramatically as a curtain falling on a mystery play, a cloud passed across the moon, and the drama being enacted below them in the Warren's garden was lost to view. They both stood there for a long time, scarcely breathing, but when the cloud had passed and the garden was once again bathed in the moon's ghostly light, there was nothing to be seen. Whatever had happened, was apparently over and done with. But not for Alice Treber. Let sleeping dogs lie had never been her favorite motto, so that after 3 days without sight or sound of Emily Warren, Alice decided to take matters into her own hands.
I don't care what you think or what you don't think, Fred Treber. 3 whole days and not a sign of her. As respectable, God-fearing citizens, we've no choice, have we?
But, Alice...
No choice at all.
Come on, Johnson, put your back into it. That's better. Over there, dog.
But, Mr. Warren, sir, the lady was only doing her duty.
Duty? My back, sir.
As she thought fit.
Alice Treber's nothing but a nosy, meddling old busybody.
As any law-abiding, conscientious citizen would.
And as a result of which, you move in here with your Gestapo and start tearing the place apart. Look at my garden. Took years to lay that lawn. My God, they're starting on my dahlia beds now.
Your own doing, I'm afraid, sir. If you'd chosen to cooperate in the first place...
Cooperate? I like that. By confessing to an act I didn't even commit, you mean. Let's get it straight, shall we, Inspector? It's not that I'm not all for making your unpleasant duty a little less unpleasant for you. For both of us. But one's got to draw the line somewhere.
Your wife is missing, sir. On your own admission, not a sight or sound of her for 3 days. Not since the night the Treepers saw...
What they saw. Then, for God's sake, Lister is missing. And get these vandals out of my house and off my property.
Oh, you do concede the fact, then?
That she's missing? Well, if by missing you mean that she's gone away, that I am at present uncertain of her whereabouts, I concede the fact.
Excuse me, sir.
Well, what is it, Constable?
We finished upstairs, sir.
Well, make a start down here, then.
Why not take a peek in the cocktail cabinet?
The cellar, Constable.
It's locked, sir.
The key, sir. Mr. Warren, the key.
On a nail, the right-hand side of the door.
Right, when you've got things going down there, Constable, see if they've come up with anything in the garden.
Right, sir. All right, you lot. Get up with it.
Not a sledgehammer, for God's sake.
No, sir. Having conceded the fact that your wife is missing...
That she's gone away.
How do you account for her absence?
I don't. I can't. She simply packed a suitcase during the night and left me.
You know, of course, she was very heavily insured.
Fairly heavily insured. We both were, but I'm still standing here, aren't I?
And that you are the sole beneficiary.
It's a fairly common arrangement between husband and wife, I believe.
Fairly common. And this blood stain on the carpet, sir, near the window?
I've already explained. It's my own. I gashed my hand when I was replacing the broken paint.
Oh, we can check that, you know.
I've no doubt when you finished tearing the house apart and found nothing, you'll eventually get round to it.
It's not a very expert job, sir, is it?
It needed fixing in a hurry.
Oh?
I happen to be allergic to drafts.
Drafts, sir? What, in high summer?
And very susceptible at that.
Sir? Yes, well, Constable? Reporting from the garden, sir, they found the trunk. Right in the center of the lawn, more or less just where the tree was first indicated. I took the liberty of examining its contents, sir.
And? Oh, man.
A dead cat, sir.
What?
A dead cat. So, I'm guilty of burying a dead cat. What's the penalty, Inspector? The hangman's noose? A life sentence with no options?
You were very evasive, Mr. Warren. At first you denied that you'd buried anything.
Because I didn't think it was any of your damn business.
The animal's head had been smashed in, sir.
Mr. Warren?
I'm not in the habit of examining dead cats. All right. If you must know, I happen to be allergic to cats as well.
The cat was your wife's?
Is that significant?
It might be. It's my theory, sir, that after you killed your wife, you then killed the cat.
Fascinating. And why should I do that?
Perhaps because it would always remind you of your wife.
Or perhaps because the creature had witnessed the disposing of the body and might lead us to...
Constable.
Sir?
You'll be up for promotion if you're not careful, Constable.
Anything else to report?
Not a thing, sir. Covered everything, the house, top to bottom, garden, end to end.
I see. In that case, we'd better call it a day. Well, we'll naturally be along to make good any damage, Mr. Warren.
Thoughtful of you.
But that still doesn't mean I'm convinced.
That you'll be hearing from my solicitor? You should be.
Sorry, Inspector. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, yes, Mr. Trevor. Well, what is it now?
Just, well, a sudden thought. Mr. Warren also has a little place at Lakeside Park.
Oh, Fred.
Pretty spot, surrounded by scrub and woodland. And just recently, Mr. Warren mentioned he was laying a lawn. I thought it might...
Of some significance.
Oh, now, look. Not my lawn.
It might indeed, Mr. Trevor. Constable, get the men together.
Right, sir.
Mr. Warren, I have the distinct feeling you'll be hearing from us again. Good day, sir.
Good day.
Did I say something wrong, Robert?
Fred Trevor, I'll never play chess with you again.
That very night, if Alice Trevor hadn't been snoring her head off due to a somewhat potent sleeping draught added to her nightly cup of drinking chocolate, she might have seen the two men crossing her lawn and that of her neighbors. Between them, they carried a somewhat bulky load wrapped in a tarpaulin. The men in question were her own husband, Fred, absent by default, and the highly suspect Albert Warren. The bundle between them, the earthly remains of the much-missed Emily. Arriving at his own house, Albert let them in by the side door, and from there through the kitchen and down the steps that led to his cellar.
Where's the ruddy turn?
The police have left your cellar looking like a battlefield.
Good idea. Hiding her over at your place, Fred. Smart thinking. But you're sure Alice didn't suspect anything?
Not a chance. Never goes down into the cellar on account of the spiders, you see.
Let's have her over here, then. That's it. Nice of the police to leave this hole. Roll her in, then.
Very deep.
Deep enough.
You sure they won't find her?
Not a chance. Pass us this way. Aye, foot and a half should do it. The law will be back in the morning to do the job properly. Would you believe it? The old cow's mouth is still open.
Would you like me to close it?
No need. Let's just fill it for her, shall we?
Funny to think, a year from now, my Alice will be going the same way. We do have to wait a full year.
It's what we agreed.
What we agreed.
That should do it. Checkmate, game and match, eh?
Albert.
Fred?
One thing.
Out with it, then.
You didn't really mean what you said about never playing chess with me again, did you?
At the time, took a lot of work, that lawn, out at Lakeside, you know.
But now?
Well, we're partners, aren't we?
I'll set up the board, shall I, Albert?
Why not?
Albert followed Fred up the cellar steps. If he had a thought at all, it was only to remember the old adage, to the effect that the safest place to hide anything is where no one will ever look. And the second safest place? Where they've looked already. When Albert reached the top of the steps, he switched off the light. He never looked back.
That was Vincent Price, bringing you The Price of Fear. Also starring in this story, remains to be seen, were Mervyn Johns, Michael Gwynn, Clive Swift, and Avril Angus, with Diana Bishop and Robin Brown. Remains to be Seen was first recounted by Jack Ritchie, dramatized by William Ingram, and produced by John Dyer.
Thank you.